Walter Price, Reel 4.
Well, we were in Constantine. And then we moved to a place called Lavadure, established a headquarters there. That was again in a school.
That was a traditional building, was it? Or?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Not the sort of schools you see. Prefab jobs these days, no. It was a... The French probably erected it for all the French children and all that area. Mm-hmm. They didn't do anything for the natives, as far as I know. But we were there from February 43 to March the same year. I also remember when we saw our first Churchill tank, because we'd got copies of what were known as flails. These were steel chains fixed to a rod in front of a tank, which was used for detonating mines before the tank was blown up. And we had to produce drawings to be sent out on these flails, but we didn't know the size of the Churchill tanks. And Churchill tanks were coming up our road, so we used to chase after them as they went up the hill, and they went up fairly slowly. They were huge things. And measure them to get the right measurements, so that they could, these flails could be made to exact measurements. That was something I remember of Lavadure.
Must be quite difficult trying to measure the tank as it's moving.
Yeah, well, it wasn't the first. Two of us, and it wasn't easy. I can remember the other chap, we were laughing our heads off, really, but we shouldn't have been, because he was very serious. And, these tanks, of course, they don't move all that fast, not uphill anyway. Mm. I can remember that. And another episode, I was taken with a... This is my first contact with the result of war, really. I've forgotten his name, this officer, and I. We went ahead to do a recce, and we stayed one night in an outlandish village, which was obviously on one of the major roads in Algiers. And it was pretty well the border between Algiers and Tunisia. And he called out. We were outside, standing outside the cottage, and this jeep sort of pulled up, and he was lost. He was going back somewhere, and we noticed that he had this sort of bundle on top, and he was acting as a sort of emergency ambulance, and he had a dead body on top. And I thought, well, that was my first experience of death in the war. Mm. Yeah, I'm sure of it. Except I've forgotten to tell you, when I was in Ireland, I did get a leave to Swansea, and that was the nearest thing too. we were bombed in Swansea, and we had to go into an Anderson shelter, that can be in the garden. But we then went from this little village down to a place which is historic now. We were on the fringes of Kasserine, the Kasserine Pass. As we were going down, in front of us were these huge columns of trucks and cars and whatnot going south, it would be, towards Kasserine, which we learnt later were the Guards Division, one of the Guards Divisions. And I remember the big notices on these straight roads, huge notices that they'd put erected on the side of the road: don't sit and die, jump and run. And all of a sudden we saw this whole convoy stop and people running, and of course we did the same, because that was normally the way you were strafed by German Messerschmitts. But this happened to turn out, this plane that was flying right towards us was a French plane, so, you know, it was a false alarm, but I can remember that. Anyway, we got to the place that we, this officer wanted to get to, this forward position, and we were in a valley, and I remember again there was a vehicle next to us, and that had a body in with what you usually wrap muslin, is it? Meat in,
yeah.
At least it used to. And he'd been a pilot, apparently, because he was an RAF. And then we beat a hasty retreat, because the Germans had captured the American tanks and were attacking us. Well, not us, because we were beating a retreat to Lavradio. But the guards, of course, stayed there, and they held it at Kasserine. I think that was one of the last operations that Rommel, his army, successfully did the Kasserine Pass, except that they were held later. Had they got through, of course, they would have come round and done a hell of a lot of damage to our forward armies. Anyway, that...
How aware were you of the progress of the action in North Africa? Were you following the action and what was happening? And
yeah, we used to have... sort of, I don't think we ever had any, we didn't have any newspapers or anything like that, but we would get information from, I mean, being with Chief Engineer, First Army, you would have all the other arms with you. I mean, you'd have signals, intelligence, ordnance, RASC in those days, and pioneers, all the representatives, all their headquarters would be with us. And yeah, you'd get information from, we'd all mess together as sergeants, so sergeants of signals would sort of be able to tell you what was happening and whether it was going well. Because, well, we were lucky in that respect, getting some information anyway. Whereas I don't think the ordinary man in a unit, like a gunner, he obviously do his little bit, but he wouldn't know the overall strategy or how it was all going.
So you felt you had a good idea of how things were going?
A reasonable idea, yeah. Now then, where were we? Lavender. And then we moved on to Souk El Arba, a little town. Whilst the big battles of Medjez El Bab was taking place, we moved from Souk El Arba in a camp to Souk El Kemis, a town called Tibar, I think it was, or Thibar. And then we moved to outside Medjez El Bab. Because the war by that time, the First Army was making very good, rapid progress after Medjez El Bab and a battle called Longstop Hill, where...
What work were you doing all this time? Were you constantly doing drawings, maps, whatever?
Well, it began to ease off, really, because we were under camp and moving quite often. So not really. After we left Lavadure, wasn't very busy as far as drawing office work was concerned. However, I do remember when we were in the camp at Medjez El Bab, seeing thousands of German prisoners marching along the roads and being billeted in cages, actually, near our camp. And there were the officers were segregated, obviously, and there was one famous general, but I can't remember his name now, that I saw. And all these, what impressed you about the German officers, and to some extent the German soldiers, they were, well, the officers were very well dressed and very well turned out, and the prisoners were very clean and retained, you know, discipline. And they used to spend most of the evening singing a chorus. And they were very good prisoners, and they'd had enough.
Were they very tired and exhausted?
They'd had it. All they wanted to do was get home, because they'd been there quite a long time, and had obviously either been shipped from Italy or come up with the eighth part of the Eighth Army. So we then went from Medjez to Carthage, because That's the thing I can always remember, from Medjez to Carthage. You'd never believe the way that the army moved from Medjez to Carthage. I mean, it was like a speed track. It was, because it was all over, and we were then moving in to occupy Tunis itself. And the speeds with which that was done was amazing. To see all this traffic moving in one solid column at quite a pace was something to see.
So you were moved to Carthage, were you?
Yes, we went under canvas at Carthage.
Uh-huh. Is that the first time you've been under canvas?
No, we were under canvas in, after we left Lavradio, we were under canvas all the time.
Right.
We were at Carthage from May 1943 to June 1943, when we moved to Saint-Germain, which was the other side of Tunis, a little seaside place, very nice, where you could go swimming in the beautiful sea. And we were there a month. And then I went to Philippeville, we all must have gone to Philippeville for 3 months. Mm-hmm.
What was it like there? What sort of place was it?
I can't remember much about Philippeville, except that I can remember mounds of oranges in not sort of little mounds you see in the market here, but the size of the room, and as I said when I first saw Algiers, this African architecture, which was quite simple, very clean, perhaps different hues, but mainly white, and probably a sort of weak yellowish colouring, and very attractive. But I've forgotten what we did in Philippeville. It couldn't have been anything important. I think we were still waiting to go to Tunis. And I got to Tunis on the 18th of October 1943, and stayed there until the first month of 1944.
So where were you billeted there?
In a souk. Well, it was a street which had houses, well, they're quite big houses, well built. Tunis is a fine city. We had a big house where we were billeted, and we had a proper offices in the middle of Tunis. Because I should have told you, actually, that at the end of the fight him when the war was over, the First Army was disbanded as such. And I was, that was probably the reason I went to Philippeville, that, yeah, that's correct, I've got it now. After First Army was disbanded, we were dispersed to various units, and I was sent to Tunis to join 20 CRE works as a staff sergeant. I had become a staff sergeant in charge of the drawing office. And as I said, we had very good ability and accommodation and a splendid office there. And they were there, I just joined them. Obviously their staff sergeant Strassman had left them, been posted somewhere else, and I took it over. It was after Carthage, Saint-Germain, Philippeville, then Tunis. Then, yeah, I was in Tunis until 1944, first month of 1944.
So what was going on then? What were you doing? What was the burden of your work?
Well, in Tunis, the burden of the work there, I was part... Well, I was the draftsman, Staff Sergeant draftsman, and in this billet of ours we had what's known as WO2 warrant officers twos, and they were mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, clerk of works. They were all people, soldiers who had sort of administrative jobs, and specialist jobs. And then we looked after the area of Tunis, which meant that I would produce the drawings when necessary, and the other people would be involved with their particular arms again. Like the ordnance people would have their dumps, and the electrical people would go around and give advice as to what they've got to do to get the electrics right and so on, and the mechanical people, and looking after hospitals and any military establishment that required their services. So it was very interesting. But I was sent on the 6th of the 1st, 1944, until the 21st of the 2nd, 1944, to Gabes, which was south of Tunis. And the Gabes was the town in which I joined a Graves Registration Unit. And as soon as I had gotten the house of this unit, I had to report to them. I could smell death. And because these were the people who recovered bodies. Mm-hmm. And my job, I'd been sent down there to log and map routes through minefields. There were 80,000 mines, because this was the Marath Line. You may have heard of the Marath Line, which the 8th Army couldn't get across. But it was eventually the 50th Northumbrian Division tried to get across it. The Wadi is a depression, which was a sort of riverbed, I suppose, and the tanks couldn't get across it. And if they attempted to get across it, the Germans, Italians, etc., had built such fortifications and had such armour waiting for them that they didn't have a chance. So in the end, General Hapag, a New Zealander, took his army, Freiburg, General Freiburg, took his army, or instructed the army to go round, and I'd like to come round the other side, but did it. But my job, that had happened probably a year before I went, well, not quite a year, 9 months before. But we had left, as far as I know, 200 dead down there, and the bodies had to be recovered. Now, I can always remember we had an artesian works company with us, and their job was to clear the mines so that the war graves people could walk and get to the bodies, which were generally buried, and retrieve them. But the thing was that there were so many mines, and that the war had been so fierce in so much as shrapnel had landed on the desert, and it was impossible to start sweeping using your electric sweepers to pick up the mines until you'd actually swept with brooms the shrapnel off the roadway or pathway.
Yeah.
This they did, and eventually, after that time that we were there, they retrieved all the bodies. But one thing I can remember is that the officer in charge of the artesian works company, they were an RE company, was a chap that I'd known in Swansea. He was a qualified architect. And once we sort of met, we had many chats together about past life in Swansea in the architectural profession. And I remember being with him one day, and we were past a sort of hollow which had obviously been a field ambulance unit, and they'd carried out operations and whatnot there. And I can remember my companion saying to me, "Officer, there was a wrist sticking out from the ground, just bones." And when they dug him up, they found his identity disc and his name. And he said, "Gosh," he said, "I was in Octu with that chap. I can remember him." That was this officer I was with, which I thought was pretty grim.
Yes, yeah.
So that was, I then went back to Tunis, and I was in Tunis until the 6th of the 3rd, 44. Then I went to Bizerta, and we stayed there 5 days. Then I got on LCC, land LST 316, that was it. Land in ship's tank 316. And a flat bottom, huge boat. And we were on it from 3 days actually, and landed at Naples, went up through the Straits of Messina. It was interesting.